Hi, I'm Kyle.
And I'm Jeremy, and we are the Social Ninjas. Hi-ya!
With practice, Jeremy and I have reached the point where social anxiety doesn't control our lives. I went from being anxious to speak to people to speaking in front of hundreds of people without a sweat.
That's amazing! I went from being anxious to be able to approach anyone to interviewing celebrities in Hollywood and giving free hugs across the world. Now, we both co-host a podcast where we interview amazing human beings.
Which is something I would have been terrified to do in the past.
And while we aren't battling social anxiety like we used to, we still have mental health that we work to improve every single day.
That's why we created this podcast, to be able to provide valuable information to you on how to feel the best you can, and also normalize the conversation around mental health, because we all have mental health.
And if I don't take care of my mental health, I'm not being the best version of myself.
Same here. We all need to take care of our mental health, and the Social Ninjas podcast is here to help you do just that.
A quick note. We are not health professionals, and what we say should not be used in place of or replacement of medication or your doctor.
Enjoy the show! Welcome to the Social Ninjas podcast. Today, I am your host, co-host. Whoa, sorry. Try to take over there. And my other co-host, Jeremy, is here with me as well. What is up?
How's it going? My name is Jeremy. I'm the host today.
Oh, what?
Huh. Whoa. Whoa there, buddy. Bump the brakes.
This is a good way to start.
We have a special guest today, Kyle. Since you're hosting, you want to go ahead and introduce him?
Absolutely. It's Kevin Hines. What's going on, Kevin?
Nothing much. How are you guys today?
Good. It's good to have you.
How is your mental health today?
Man, that's a good question. I actually had a call today. I always do check-ins. It helps me kind of gauge where I'm at, and I stay with like my five core emotions. So today I had fear, today I had sadness, today I have joy, and I had some shame. And I understood the person I talked to was like, tell me about that shame. I was like, oh my gosh, okay, let's do it. So we went into the shame, and I was going back to you, but like we went into it, and she helped me actually reframe it, which was unexpected. So
very good. Five core emotions. I love that.
Yeah. So going back to you, Kevin, unless Kyle wants to say how he is.
I'm not going to do all the interviewing.
Hard to follow up. I was just going to say good. I didn't go through the five core emotions, but pretty good overall mental health day for me. So
good.
So for the humans listening to this amazing podcast, they hear good things, and they don't know who Kevin Hines is. Who is Kevin Hines? What is he about? And a little bit about your story.
Sure. So I'm a husband and a son. I'm a husband to my wife, a son to my mom and dad. I am a author, a mental health advocate and speaker, a storyteller and a filmmaker. I make short form video on YouTube every Thursday and Saturday on the topic of mental, brain, mind, behavior, health and well-being, and physical health and well-being. I also co-directed and produced a film called Suicide, The Ripple Effect, which has now been seen by over 1 million people in 20 different countries. And it is about how people can find a light at the end of the tunnel while living with suicidal ideation, how they can find hope. It's also about people who live with those they've lost to suicide and that survivor's guilt and how to overcome that and how to defeat depression. It's a beautiful film that traveled around the world and over 300 people said that film saved their life. And that film, we will be hosting free screenings all throughout this year, a number of times a month. So look out for that on our social media channels. I wrote a book called Crack Not Broken, Surviving and Thriving After a Suicide Attempt. And that book is my life story, my journal, the chronicles of my life, living with bipolar disorder, fighting it. And of course, my attempt at 19 of going over the Golden Gate Bridge and surviving that attempt. one of which only, you know, in the last, I would say, 84 years of that bridge being open, the Golden Gate Bridge, the number one suicide spot in the world, only 39 people have survived that fall. And that's roughly, not, that means that 98% of those who've done that never get to tell their stories again. They're gone forever. And I got to live from what I did, and I get to be here every day. And I'm so grateful to exist and to experience life on a daily basis. I mean, the best thing about, the most amazing thing on that day was that a sea lion came to my aid and kept me afloat into the Coast Guard boat arrived behind me. And this creature literally saved my life before the Coast Guard or the guys at the hospital did when they were refurbished my shattered back with titanium. And so all that is to say, I travel the world pre-COVID 300 plus days a year, sharing a story of hope, healing, and recovery, trying to give light to people in mental pain and trying to help them recognize their own true value, that they are worthy, that they do matter, that suicide should never be the solution to their problems, because it is in fact the problem, and that they are beautiful just as they are, and they're all 1,000 times greater than the worst thing they've ever done.
Wow, that was powerful. So I have to ask, how did you get from, you know, jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge to where you are now? What was that journey like?
You know, it's been a long and arduous journey. It's been one that has been paved with a lot of pain. I've been in 9 psych ward stays in the last 14 years because of suicidal depression. It's something that has followed me. It's something that I still live with on a regular basis, but will never kill me. Every time I'm suicidal today, I will say 4 simple but effective words: I need help now. And every time I've done that to people I do or don't know, I've been given the help I need to get to a safe place every single time, because I'm self-aware with my diagnosis and self-aware with my mental struggles. And it's been a journey to get to this place, but I'll tell you how I got to start to speaking about it. I was in the first hospitalization, the first psych ward stay. I was wearing a back brace, walking with a cane. I had gone from, in the physical hospital, I'd gone from a wheelchair to a walker and a back brace to a back brace and a cane, and then right into my first psychiatric unit. And it was in that psychiatric unit that there was a Franciscan friar who was the chaplain of the hospital. And he was an amazing man, looked like St. Francis without the birds, with his black robe and his white robe and his red rosary in one hand. And he comes into my room one day, and this is a guy who would always look at the chart before he entered the room to know what the patient was in for. But he didn't look at the chart for the first time in, I don't know, 30 years. And he walks into my room and he goes, "Hey kid, what are you in for?" And I said, "Well, brother, I jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge." And he said, "Yeah, and I'm the Pope." He didn't believe me. He thought I was delusional. I said, "No, brother, that's why the back brace, that's why I'm walking with this cane. I really did do that." And he goes, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I feel so terrible. Let's pray." And he comes over to my left side and we say in Our Father together, which I'm very familiar with as a Catholic. And he says to me after, he says, "Kid, when you get better, we ought to talk about this. You ought to talk about this." And I looked at this man and I said out loud, "About what to who?" And I thought, who is this guy and what the hell is he talking about? Talk about this to who? Who's going to listen? I was ashamed of what I did. I was embarrassed of what I did. I didn't want to tell anybody about it besides my immediate family and the people that knew from my school. But anyway, I get out of the hospital. On the last day of my stay, he says, "Kid, I expect you'll talk about this." And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, pal. Okay." And I get out there and I go to church with my dad, the church I grew up in, the church that I'd be married at later. And the same priest who married my wife and I later comes out of the service and he says, "Kevin, how would you like to come talk to our 7th and 8th grade class about your experience this Good Friday?" And I said, "Father, I don't have a speech and I wouldn't know what to say." And that's when my dad shoved me forward and he goes, he'll do it. And I look back at my dad like, "What are you doing? I don't want to do this." And he said, "You'll do it, Kevin. We need closure. And when Pat Hines says things twice, you do them." He's 6'1" and I'm not. And so I go on Good Friday, not 7 months after my attempt, and I tell this story. This story that was 17 pages long, I read it from the page. I was crying the whole time. It took 45 minutes to read aloud. I was shaking like a leaf. I was holding my cane. using my back brace over my shirt and like dropping page by page to the floor. I was terrified. And during this speech, I'm thinking to myself, who is this helping? Why am I doing this? It's not going to help a soul. And immediately upon finishing, 8 hands go up. And these questions were intuitive, intelligent, empowering questions. And I thought there was an impact made. Well, 2 weeks later, I got called to the rectory and the priest handed me, Father Michael Harriman handed me a manila envelope with 120 letters from 120 kids. And I'm no fool. They mandated these kids to write these letters. 120 kids didn't get together and go, let's all write to the suicidal guy. But they wrote to me and they were not given parameters on what they could write. They were told to write to their heart's content. And we found out through these letters that 6 of those kids were actively suicidal. We got them to the help they needed. And my father read those letters and he turned to me and he said, Kevin, we have to do this however, wherever, and whenever possible. And we never stopped.
Wow. So is your dad still a kind of an active part as far as helping you, you know, spread this message?
You know, for a long time, it was my dad and my uncle Kevin before he passed, may he rest in peace, my great uncle Kevin, who would inspire me and encourage me to go talk about these things. They would help me find venues to speak my story. And they would, you know, we ended up doing, hundreds of thousands of hours of free speeches because we wanted the message to get out there. And they would come with me often. And then my dad kind of stepped off and did his own thing. My great uncle Kevin passed away and he was really the one that sent me all the books on public speaking and would teach me how to speak better. And he would go through my speech line by line and be like, this is what you need to change. He was really amazing in that regard. And my dad would come with me and he would sometimes speak alongside me. And now today, my wife and I do it together. Often, sometimes it's just me, but we're often physically in the same space together. We go to the presentations together. She'll speak sometimes. We'll do panels together. As I said, we made that movie, so we do panels after that. It's been one heck of a journey. And the best part of all this is when people stand up afterwards and say, I have bipolar disorder. I've never told anyone, and I have thoughts of suicide, and today I'm gonna stay. And when that happens, it's like a kick in the heart. And it just makes you feel so blessed that you get to be here when you almost died and try to make an impact, try to help people change their lives.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all that. I'm kind of in awe listening to all this because I've definitely had moments in my past where I'm like, what's the point? I'm so freaking depressed. So it's, and I like normalizing it. I'm curious if you're open to going back into like what went into, you know, before you you jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and I would love to hear the changes you made since then.
Sure. I mean, before I attempted to take my life off the GGB and before I jumped, I was in denial of my diagnoses. I hated the idea that I had bipolar disorder. I didn't want to believe it was real. I believed I was flawed, and I didn't want to live with this label. And it was after my attempt and after my third psych ward stay of 9, which was involuntary. So the first 3 were involuntary. I was forced in against my will. The next 6 psych ward stays, I walked into them and said, I need help. I need to be here. I won't be here. And so I in essence saved my own life with family and friends by my side. But it was in that third psych ward stay that everything changed. I realized that I needed to fight for my mental well-being. I realized I needed to accept the diagnosis, whether I wanted to have that label on it or not. And I realized that it was so important for me to understand the diagnosis, to educate myself about it so that then I could defeat it. Because when you become educated about what ails you, you are empowered to defeat whatever that comes your way. And this is what I say to people who don't comprehend what I mean by that. You know, we've all experienced pain. If you're old enough, you've experienced pain, right? I think we can agree upon that. And people look at pain in 2 different ways. They look at pain, and then look at how they're suffering from pain. But that term suffering comes usually from our clinicians and our doctors. They say to us when they first diagnose us with something, you're suffering from bipolar disorder, you're suffering from schizophrenia, you're suffering from an eating disorder, you're suffering from glaucoma, or whatever the situation may be. And then we then, as patients, we adopt that narrative and we become the sufferers. And I used to have video after video, vlog after vlog, blog after blog, all these writings I did. In my book, I talk about how I suffer. And I came to a realization about 2.5 years ago when I developed a skin disease where I got burns from the bottom of my feet to the top of my head, second-degree burns across my entire body from a medication I was on. And it felt like knives and needles were coming from my bones through my skin across my entire body for 30 weeks, 24 hours a day. 30 weeks, 24/7, feeling like knives and needles were coming through my skin everywhere. I was on what's called the tipping point of Stevens-Johnson syndrome. I was in the most excruciating pain I'd ever experienced in my entire life, physically. But it didn't come close to the pain I dealt with in my own head, mentally. And I made a decision. I said to myself, pain is inevitable. It's coming for all of us if it hasn't already, but suffering is optional. And I haven't suffered a day in my life. Listen, I was born in squalor, in terrible poverty, and I was adopted by a beautiful family 9 months later. I was given the gift of a second chance at life, but I've never suffered a day in it. And I think that when I recognize that if we say we're sufferers, then we become the victims of our own story. But if we say we are the heroes of our own story and that we thrive in spite of the pain, then we become the directors of our own story. And we don't have to let it defeat us. Instead, we let that pain build us brick by brick from the ground up to be stronger than ever. I think it's about changing your perspective.
So did you have trouble doing that? Well, I mean, was that an overnight process, or is that something you had to, you know, kind of consistently work on to really change your perspective and not be a sufferer, as you say, and realize that that's an optional thing?
You know, it really took me until 2.5 years ago with this physical pain. I didn't see it that way until I realized I could survive anything. You know, in this physical pain, you have to understand, I wanted to die every day. For 30 weeks, I wanted to take my life. But I would wake up, I would say, no, I'm going to fight. I'm going to fight this pain every day until they find a cure for my skin disease, which we did eventually. My skin is clear. I don't have the pain anymore. But it was a beast. It was an animal I had to fight for a really long time. It was scary. But I realized that the incredible nature of the human being to survive pain at any cost, the incredible ability that we all have inside of us to be resilient in the face of pain and struggle. That's what I realized in this moment, this 30-week period, was that no matter how bad it got, I could defeat this if I just believed. If I changed my internal perspective on what pain meant, then I never had to suffer another day in my life, then I could instead thrive.
Love it. That's awesome. Yeah. I love the whole mindset aspect. I love that quote you just said, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. I think that's a really good perspective to have on pain and suffering. I mean, pain comes to all of us, but yeah, we choose if we suffer or not. I love that.
Thank you. You know, when this was going on, I would experience so much pain. I couldn't walk. Couldn't stand, had a hard time breathing, but I just continued, you know. And we can do one of two things when pain comes around. We can complain about it, or we can push forward. And I chose the latter.
Hello, this is Kyle, your favorite co-host of the Social Ninjas podcast. Don't worry, I won't tell Jeremy. I just want to share with you all this really awesome mental health app designed specifically for men. So we all know that mental well-being takes practice, it takes strength, and it takes vulnerability,
which for us men is sometimes kind of hard. It's not something that we fix. It's something that we honor, and no man needs to do that alone. That's where the Tether app comes into play. It's an area to practice those skills. With the app, you get access to peer programming, content, and a 24/7 support network where you can support other men and be supported yourself. It's not just a place to come when you're having a bad day. It's for every single day, and we celebrate a lot in the app. It's available on the App Store and Google Play Store for free. All you gotta do is go check it out, go download it. It is the Tether app, and that's T-E-T-H-R. Go download it right now, then come back to the podcast and listen.
So what do you do today to keep yourself or keep your mental health at an optimal level and keep the, I don't even know exactly what you want to call it, the suicidal thoughts from coming back? Is there kind of some proactive things that you do?
Absolutely. I'll tell people that there's a great way you can look these up, because I have a program designed for the every human being to fight mental pain. And if you go to my channel, youtube.com/Kevin Hines, which you can see here, you go to youtube.com/Kevin Hines, you go to the playlist series, The Art of Wellness. So playlist series, The Art of Wellness. There's 10 steps, 12 videos on how to better balance your brain, mind, behavioral, mental, and physical health and well-being. They are common sense tools to better your brain health. They are ways that are, they are science-based, evidence-informed techniques to stay stable no matter what you're going through. And I want you to take them. They're yours. They're free. They're for you. They're for you to dissect. They're 12 videos, 10 steps, 3 to 5 minutes each, easily digestible. And I'll tell you a few of them right now. The first one's one of the most important, is educating myself. I read every article I can on bipolar disorder, its newest treatments, its newest, most impactful and most successful, reputable proven treatments and programs on how to defeat it. I have a Google alert on bipolar disorder and depression. I have a Google alert on suicide and suicide prevention. So I know what's going on in those fields. So I'm well versed in what's new in mental health law and things like that. So I can be a good advocate. That's education. And then you want to also educate the people around you. So giving books like Loving Someone with Bipolar Disorder by Julie A. Fast, Loving Someone with Bipolar Disorder by Julie A. Fast to people in mental pain and their families. I gave that book to my father. It changed our relationship. I gave that book to people in my family, my friends group, changed our relationships because they saw me in a different light. And they were kind enough to read that book and to see that it wasn't that easy living with this disease. Reading the book Bipolar for Dummies. There's a For Dummies book for every mental illness. Get yours today. We all have issues, you know? So I did that, and I actually got to be an article. I got to write an article for the third edition of that book, which was phenomenal. I reached out to the authors Candida Fink and Joe Cranach, and I said, listen, I use your Bipolar for Dummies as my own personal second Bible. It helps me to stay stable. You know, how can I help you in your effort to reach people from your book? They said, why don't you write an article for it? So I did. So that covers the education piece. That's just one of the 10 steps. Exercise is a huge step for me. I have my own home gym. It's no plug here, but it's a Bowflex Revolution. I use it every day, and it helps me stay stable. I don't overuse it. I don't go, you know, wild in the gym. I do it to my ability, my comfort level. I work out anywhere between 10 and 30 minutes a day because it leads to better brain health and better mood. It really helps me because you're releasing those endorphins in the brain that make you feel better. Eating healthy, highly nutritious foods. You feed your gut to feed your brain. Your gut biomes are directly connected to your brain chemistry and how you feel mentally. So if you're eating poorly and you're eating all processed foods, you're gonna feel down in the dumps. You're gonna have a lot of agitation. You're gonna have a lot of aggression. You're gonna have a lot of anger. You're gonna have a lot of mental instability because of the way you eat. We know this: that food is medicine. And you know, during these COVID times, I was in phenomenal shape prior to COVID times. I have gained a bit of weight during COVID times, and I'm working really hard to burn that off and to eat more healthily than I was in the past 6 months. Prior to that, I had a very strict food regimen that I was on that was extremely nutritious and very, I don't like to use the term healthy because that means so many different things for so many different people, but certainly highly nutritious foods that feed your gut biomes good food to actually feed your brain and make you function at the highest capacity and level. And then there are, 8 other steps that help me stay stable, and you can find those in youtube.com/Kevin Hines, and they're there for everybody, as I said before. I just want to help as many people as possible find their own pathway to healing, and I think that it starts with the individual. It starts with the person sitting down, assessing their life and their lifestyle, and saying, what are the things I need to do to change it right now? And here's the problem. People don't want to do the hard work. They don't. They want to take a pill and be miraculously changed in one day. Look at all these, diet pills with amphetamines in them. That they're basically, you're giving yourself speed to work out in so you can cut the weight fast. That's not the way to do it. The way to do it is moderately over time, not excessively, and in a careful state of mind and being. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm taking every precaution to be safe with my diagnosis and my treatment plan so that I can be the best version of myself possible.
I'm really curious for someone who's doesn't have time, I guess, to read the how to support someone with bipolar. Do you have any main ways in which you can support someone with bipolar?
The biggest way you can support someone with bipolar disorder, in my opinion, is to just listen actively to what they're dealing with. Don't listen to interrupt. Don't listen to intercede. Listen to listen. Hear their words, accept it as their reality. Let them know that that's their reality, and that whether they're having delusions or not, let them know that their reality is real to them and you respect that. And let them know that you've got their back no matter what, and that they can tell you anything, and it's a safe space. And you won't judge them. I think that's the best thing you can do for someone with bipolar disorder, or for any mental illness for that matter.
Yeah, I was thinking, that's pretty good general advice in general, just for mental health overall.
Well, often we feel so unheard. We feel so unlistened to. People are all, so many times people are telling us, it's all in your head, snap out of it, get over it, move on. And we, in order to conquer our pain, we need to accept that it's real.
Yeah, 100%. Going back a little bit, you were talking about how, before COVID, you had a really strict nutritious routine as far as keeping up with your, what you're eating. I'm curious if you had any routines pre-COVID and kind of now how you adapted with this and kind of what that experience was like. I know for me personally, I had a really great routine going into COVID, and then kind of everybody's schedule kind of, it was all put up in the air, and now we're doing all stuff from home. So everything's completely different. I'm curious, just for my own curiosity, what was your experience trying to, optimize your mental health in this new kind of setting that you're now all of a sudden in?
It almost became easier for me because I wasn't traveling as much, and thus I wasn't messing with time zones, and my brain kind of reset. And, I still educate myself every day about the diagnosis, the treatment, the reputable programs, the newest articles about the topic. I still actively exercise every day. I'm back to eating really nutritious foods. For every meal, staying stable with one cheat meal on Sundays. I'm really trying really hard to stay in moderation with certain things and to not deprive me of the things that, taste really good, but aren't necessarily so good for you, but have those on a once in a while basis, and then what I'm doing is I'm using coping strategies like music therapy, art therapy. I'm doing things like breathing therapy and breath work, resonance breathing. I'm doing all these things and so much more to stabilize my mental health. But one of the best things I'm doing is having a good sleep pattern, 6 to 8 hours a night, every night without fail. has been really phenomenal for me because it keeps me on the straight and narrow and the even keel. And if you're really having trouble with your sleep pattern, you really have to start doing research on how to better balance your sleep pattern, because that is one of the main risk factors for slipping into suicidal crisis and mental health crisis is a lack of sleep. And I know, I'm well aware that there are some jobs out there that make it almost impossible to get good sleep, as in like people who have to work at night and sleep during the day while the sun is out and it's distracting. And then there's people in certain parts of the certain continents where it's blacked out all day and you have to get used to that. You know, there's certain groups in the military that have wake and sleep shifts that are very particular. So you can't just say a blanket space, oh, everyone go get some good sleep. What you can do is say, go home, sit down, do the research on how to get better sleep for yourself in your own personal condition and situation, and then actively work hard to get there. I'm not talking to someone who hasn't lived this experience. I have been an insomniac on more than one occasions. I've lived with insomnia, parasomnia, sleep apnea, narcolepsy, as in I would fall asleep. As I'm talking to you, I just fall asleep. And so I really have worked really, really hard to get well, and it's paid off. So put in that hard work and you will too.
Yeah, I'm just going to do a little plug as well, just because I'm a big advocate for sleep as well. But there's a book by, I don't know if you've read it, by Sean Stevenson called Sleep Smarter, that is absolutely phenomenal book as far as like really easy, simple strategies to get your sleep in place. So if that's something that's of interest to you, anybody that's listening, definitely check that book out. I highly recommend it.
Awesome. There's a great book for how to better balance your nutrition. It's called The Inflammation Spectrum. You can literally take a test in the first 90 pages of the book on how to better balance your food intake and how to see what foods are poisoning your system, and then exit those foods from your system over time, and you will feel an immense difference in your mental health and your physical health as well.
Awesome. Glad to get those recommendations.
You just muted yourself, Kyle.
Okay, thank you for that, Jeremy. I am curious, you said earlier that your wife will get up and speak with you on the stage too sometimes when you guys go out and do talks. What does she bring to the table? How does she help? I'm curious on your guys' kind of relationship and how you spread this message together.
It's a great question. You know, I'm glad you asked, because nobody really does. Nobody asked that question. This is perfect. So she and I have this great relationship where we work together on all aspects of our work life and our home life. And she is my greatest caregiver, my best friend, and my greatest confidant. And she helps me present all the time by sharing the story from her perspective. What has she gone through in what I'm going through and dealing with? So when I have symptoms and issues with my bipolar disorder, how does it affect her, and how would it affect someone living with someone with bipolar disorder or any other mental illness? So she's really a great caregiver in that sense, and very helpful to the audience or audiences, because she gives that personal experience of someone who lives with someone who's going through it, but doesn't have a diagnosis herself.
Oh man, I love that so much. This makes me think a little bit off topic, but this makes me think there should be something like that for just like really everything. Like if your spouse has social anxiety, or you know how to support them in that thing. But just for me personally, I remember looking earlier in the year, because my wife, her mother passed almost a year ago now, and I remember thinking like, trying to find resources on like my side, because I'm struggling, like, what am I doing the right things, trying to find support, and you know, I was trying to like find somebody like that talks about this, and unfortunately I couldn't find anything. But I love that your wife helps do that. I think that's extremely helpful. That would definitely been, that was exactly what I was looking for earlier in the year, to kind of help me with some, you know, with some stuff I have with my wife and her grieving and me kind of just being there to support her. So yeah, I love that she does that. I think that's extremely powerful.
It is amazing. She's my greatest gift. She's the best thing that has ever happened to me, for sure.
Ditto to my wifey, if you're listening.
ditto to my imaginary wife. You're the best. Yeah, so a question we like to ask all our guests, if you had one message for the world, what would that message be?
You know, it's something I've come across every day, and it's something I think we can all be, and it's very simple. Very simple, but very neglected. Be kind. Be kind to everyone, not just the people that are nice to you. Be kind, compassionate, loving, caring, empathetic, and non-judgmental to every single person you come into contact with, no matter their behavior toward you, because you never know what they're going through or what they've been through. And we are 1,000 times greater than the worst thing you've ever done. So be kind to yourself as well.
Love it. Thanks for coming on the show, Kevin. Where can we find you at? Where can we send people to find the book, the movie, follow you on social media, all that good stuff?
Sure, sure. So at Kevin Hines Story across all socials, so across Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, at Kevin Hines Story. And then YouTube.com/Kevin Hines. And that one has 400 videos all designed to help you change your life and be more stable and be more well. And they're just also entertaining videos and some videos with some YouTube celebrities and things like that. And then you can go and you can find the film at suicidetherippleeffect.com, suicidetherippleeffect.com. You can find me at kevinhinesstory.com. So any number of ways there, find me however you can. I do answer all my YouTube comments, so that's probably the best way to ask me a question.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Kevin. Really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope everybody listening got a lot out of this.
Thank you very much, both of you. I really appreciate it.
Until next week.